want to call the January 30th, 2024 meeting of Economic Development, Planning, Education, Employment, Arts, and Agriculture to order.
That's a mouthful.
I know, we need a better acronym.
We do.
I'm going to work on it. I'm going to workshop it with some of my students. Okay, so just so everybody knows, the meeting is being live streamed by our legislative technical support specialist, Tyron Rogers. Tyron, thank you. Legislator List, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Yes, I would.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Deputy Clerk Mahler, would you please call the roll?
Chair Spearey.
Present.
Deputy Chair List.
Here.
Legislator Clinton.
Here.
Legislator Corcoran.
Here.
Legislator Hewitt.
Here.
Legislator Stewart.
Here.
And Legislator Walls.
Here.
You have 7 members present, 0 absent.
I love it. Let's keep up the perfect attendance record, please. Okay, so welcome everybody. I just wanted to take a moment to kind of make sure that we're all on the same page as to like what our agenda is and what we do in this committee. And so the official charge of the committee per the resolution is to set legislative policy and review contracts for all aspects of Ulster County Department of Economic Development, Ulster County Department of Planning, Office of Employment and Training, Ulster County Community College, Cornell Cooperative Extension, Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District, Arts, Tourism, and Libraries. We're responsible for issues pertaining to Ulster County Industrial Development Agency, the Ulster County Planning Board, Revolving Loan Fund Committee, Shovel Ready Committee, and we're here to foster relations and communications with the Ulster County Economic Alliance and the local chambers of commerce. We are also here to establish policy related to agriculture and farmland preservation. So we have a lot of work to do. I would love to just kind of go around the room and have folks introduce themselves briefly, just so that we know who we're talking about when we're talking about them. Who people are and how they're connected to us and how we'll be collaborating with them. I know some folks that are our department heads have to head out, so I'd actually like to start with them. So who do I have? Dennis.
Good afternoon or good evening now. My name is Dennis Doyle. I'm planning director for Ulster County. I'm also the director of something called the Ulster County Transportation Council. The Transportation Council is a federal creation. It's what they call a metropolitan planning organization, for which the county is host agency through the planning department, and it was created by an act of the governor, and it's consistent. It has to be done, work has to be done consistent with federal rules.
Thank you.
Lisa Berger, director of Ulster County Tourism and Office for Film, and we welcome visitors to this county and help film crews and people wanting to work in film, people are together. That's the short version.
I am Jake Wiedemeyer. I'm the executive director of the Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District. We do a lot of work with farms, with agricultural best management practices, soil health. We have a no-till program, no-till drill program. We also have a stream management program in partnership with the New York City Department of Environmental Protection. We do a little bit of everything. We do a lot of work with Cornell Cooperative Extension and Planning and Department of the Environment.
Great, thank you.
Hi everyone, I'm Amanda LaValle. I'm one of 3 deputy county executives in the county exec's office. I oversee planning, economic development, Department of the Environment, OET, tourism, UCAT, and DPW, and also help as a liaison with SUNY Ulster.
Good evening. It's been a long day. Kevin Lynch, director of economic development. Primary mission of the department is to provide incentives to local businesses, but also attract industry in the county. I work with stakeholders in the county, the IDA, certainly the Environment Department, and Tourist Department, but very happy to be here, be supportive of the way I can.
Thank you.
Hey everybody, my name is CJ Real. I'm the Acting Vice President for Administrative Services at SUNY Ulster. I just want to thank everyone for their continued support of SUNY Ulster. Thank you.
Good evening, I'm Sharon Williams. I'm the Director of the Office of Employment and Training. We primarily help residents in Ulster County sort of explore their employment opportunities and provide financial support for them when they are looking for training to upskill or to move to a livable wage.
Hi, I'm Jen Zell. I serve as the Chief of Staff and Secretary to the Board of Trustees at SUNY Ulster. Work very closely with CJ Rio and our college president, Allison Buckley, who sends her regrets for not being able to join you this evening. But I echo CJ's sentiment that we are very appreciative of the support of our institution.
Thank you. I'm Melanie Forstrom. I'm Executive Director of Cornell Cooperative Extension. We hope to host you at some point in the future at our office, so I'll go way more into depth there. We're a complicated organization that's governmental and non-profit-y, and Jake and I hug each other a lot. We have people who are like each other, so soil and water and Cornell Cooperative. I did bring the three welcomes to the new legislators on the committee. I did bring a whole booklet for the folks who might want to learn more about Cornell Cooperative as a whole and then what we do in Ulster. So,
one more thing. Two of our board members are here tonight, Herb Litz and Cassie Nolan. So.
And I will echo, we have appointees of the legislative and the executive, and Dennis Doyle is for the executive, and Megan is on our board for the legislative, so you're in close contact, communication.
Thank you. And then we'll move to the legislators at the table, so we'll start with the committee first. So Deb, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Okay, I'm Deborah Clinton. I represent Gardner and Fortunes of Plattekill. This is my first meeting, and so I have a lot to learn, and I'm glad that all of you are here to help me know more about the county.
Tom Corcoran, legislator, Town of Marlboro, District 11.
Herb Litz, resident farmer and engineer, District 9.
I'm sorry, I stepped on the wrong way. I'm Eric Stewart. I represent District 18, which is portions of the town of Marbletown and portions of the town of Hurley.
Hi, everyone. I'm Chris Hewitt. I'm the director of the Hudson Valley Current, a local nonprofit, and I represent District 21, Kerhonkson, Accord, and a piece of Napanee.
I'm Richard Walls from Marbletown, Shawnee, and I'm also a new member of the legislature.
And then Kathy?
Kathy Nolan, I represent District 22, which is the towns in Ulster County that are west of the Dividing Weir of the Ashokan Reservoir, Shandaken, Olive, Denning, and Hardenburg.
Jeff?
I am Jeff Collins. I am not on this committee. I'm just learning. I represent District 23, which is most of Woodstock and early north of the reservoir.
And I'm Megan Sperry. I'm the chair of this committee, legislator for District 17, which is a little bit of a SOPIS and the town of New Paltz, not the village of New Paltz. This is my second term on this committee. I'm also serving on the ARPA committee, and I'm a liaison for the legislature for Cornell Cooperative Extension and the Youth Bureau.
Vice chair.
Just call me V. And I think you should make Jay introduce herself.
Oh, yes.
Jay Mahler, I'm one of the deputy clerks here on the admin side of the legislature and happy to clerk this committee for Chair Sperry.
And one of my constituents.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Proud constituent. Great. So let's
get to business. So the first thing we have to do is approve the December 5th, 2023 meeting minutes. Is there any discussion on the minutes for December meeting?
Second.
Wonderful. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are approved. Okay, next we have our resolutions. So the first resolution that we are looking at is resolution number 9, which is establishing capital project number 688 for SUNY Ulster, the Americans with Disabilities Act ADA compliance resolution, which would be amending the 2024-29 capital improvement program and the 2024 capital fund budget for SUNY Ulster. Are there any discussion?
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Oh, okay.
For discussion.
For discussion. Okay. Great. Let's discuss.
Sure. Go ahead. So in our DeWitt library, we actually had a flood in our elevator shaft, which took out the control panel for the elevator, rendering the entire thing inoperable. So this resolution hopefully will help us to figure out what caused the flooding, mitigate that, and also replace the control panel and any other portions of the elevator that need. So we can have ADA compliance in our library again.
Great. And how long has it been out?
Just a couple weeks.
Since that major rainstorm. Yeah, it happened at SUNY New Paltz too. And how long will it take once it's
approved? We don't know. As soon as this gets approved and we get state funding, we're going to get the engineers on site immediately to figure out what happened.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay.
Oh, I just have one quick question. Do you have an engineering firm selected already?
We do not. We use DASNY, the Dormitory Authority, and then they basically have on-site architect.
They have on-site.
On-site architect. If they need to consult, they have. Staff.
Perfect. Because I was just going to advocate for using a local company.
Okay. Yeah. All
right. There you go.
The legislator Liz would have to recuse him.
Yes, I would.
Which he does frequently.
He does. Yes. Really good at it. Okay. Is there a motion?
Motion on to resolution 9?
Yes. Thank you.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution passes.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to resolution number 11, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to enter into an intermunicipal agreement with various municipalities for the operation of the Summer Youth Employment Program, Gun Violence Prevention Initiative, Youth Employment Program, Brighter Futures Initiative, and the Young Adult Employment Program, Office of Employment and Training. Are there any?
I'll move.
Second.
Great. So we're open for discussion. Sharon, would you like to give us any information? Or?
Sure. For the legislators that don't know what we do with these programs, these are our youth employment programs for young people between the ages of 14 and 24, primarily through our Summer Youth Employment Program, which will take place between June and July of each year. And we enter into these agreements with municipalities to act as work sites for these young people. We do have other work sites for the young people as well, but this is particularly for those work sites that are things like a town, DPW, that might hire such a hard word, but have a young person on site to work during the summer. And we have a number of initiatives. So summer youth employment is one. We also noted our new youth employment program, which is our after school program that we just received funding from for the state for January through June. Our gun violence initiative, which are programs specifically for Ellenville and Kingston. And then we have our young adult employment program for our out of school youth 18 to 24.
I was just wondering if you could explain the gun violence program a little bit more.
So it is an initiative from the state. Started probably around 3 years ago, and it was the governor's initiative to try to have guns taken off the street, but to have young people who might be on their way to be justice involved to find a better alternative, and that's through employment. And so that's the name, is Gun Violence Initiative. We actually call it here, we don't call it gun violence. It's our, Greater Hope Program. So giving it a more positive spin than the gun violence, but it's for the young people primarily in Ellenville and Kingston which were found to be more prevalent in being involved in potential crime activities.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay.
I'll make a motion to pass the resolution.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your support every year.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Take care.
Now we move on to resolution number 12, which is approving the execution of a contract amendment for $63,495 entered into by the county with the Offset House, DBA, Catamount Color, Department of Tourism.
So moved. Second.
Come on up and tell you. So this is a contract for the printing of our annual travel guide. This went out to bid 3 years ago. We're in the final year of this contract, and we were able to work with the print house to get 100% recycled paper, even though they had put in a bid without it. So when we put this out to RFP this year for 2025 for the next 3 years, we will meet all of the requirements under this. We will make sure that we meet all the sustainable purchasing requirements that have been put into place. But I did want you to know that they are giving us recycled paper at no extra cost to move that.
Well, that's so awesome. Nice.
Yeah, and you know, it's a very important tool for what we do in tourism. We just came back from the Travel Adventure Show down at the Javits Center this weekend, and we brought 14 cases of travel guides, and we were out of 12 of them on Saturday.
Wow.
So print is back, people are picking it up, and it definitely supports the $979 million that visitors spend here annually. That's it.
Did you just say $979 million?
Yes.
Can we also legitimately then say almost $1 billion?
You can indeed. We're creeping up on Orange in Westchester County every day.
That is phenomenal.
Yeah, it is. And it was
almost $1 billion.
Almost $1 billion in visitor spending. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Legislator Stewart, you had your hand up.
Yes. I was just going to say, that is so awesome that, the figure that you just...
Mm-hmm.
It just blew my mind. I don't have to recover from that. What I was going to say was, I think the 100% recycling paper, I can't even speak, recycled paper is awesome. So thank you for that. I just had a question about where this is. The Offset House is based in
Albany. It's a printer in Albany, so we go out to bid, yeah.
That's great, because for some reason, I went online and I thought it was in Vermont. So.
No, and he is the nicest man because we have a storage unit down here that's not big enough to store all of the guides that we print, and him and his son-in-law drive the overage down to us as soon as we clear out. And he doesn't charge us for anything.
That's awesome.
He's the nicest guy.
Yeah. Because I was just going to advocate for using a local firm, but regional works for me.
Yeah, I mean, and of course we're always looking for local when we go out to RFP, and that will happen this year.
Excellent.
Yep. Thank you.
I just wanted to say thank you to Director Berger for trying so hard on getting our values to align with our printing.
Mm-hmm.
Last year you found out that they also use soy ink.
Yeah.
So thank
you
for that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
We're supposed to take the paperwork.
Do I have a motion?
Motion.
Whatever.
Got the new beat in front of
me.
Jason.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. All right, let's move on to resolution number 13. This is appointing member and alternate member for the Ulster County Planning Board for the City of Kingston through the Department of Planning.
Motion, discussion.
Second. Okay.
Would you?
Yes.
Yes?
I would love that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Never sure.
Would you?
So the Ulster County Charter provides for the fact that there is a county planning board. There are 25 members on the board, one from each of the communities, and two from the city of Kingston. The process of becoming a member of the board is essentially it's recommended at the local level by resolution, with the exception of the city of Kingston, where the recommendation comes directly from the mayor. Each member has or the ability to have an alternate. The recommendations come from the community, and then the legislature confirms those recommendations or decides that they may not want to confirm those recommendations. County Planning Board essentially has a role with respect to a statutory role under state law to review what I would call discretionary actions at a local level. We're entitled to one vote. The board can issue recommendations that are disapprovals, required modifications, approvals, or having no county impact. For the first three, if we make those recommendations in order to overrule a recommendation of the county planning board, it requires a majority plus one. So in general, what you think about is most local planning boards and town boards are five-member boards. So instead of a 3-2 vote, you require a 4-1 vote in order to overrule the recommendation of the county planning board. I would say about 60% of the work that we do is the board doesn't consider to have a county impact. The rest of them, we do make a lot of consistent recommendations. Sometimes we upset the community, sometimes we upset the applicant, sometimes we actually approve things that are there. And we lead on a lot of different areas, whether it's solar, whether it's short-term rental, or whether it's stormwater work, or whether it's pedestrian bicycle safety work. All of those recommendations go into the county planning board's consideration. The staff of the board essentially, the staff of the department that supports the board, I have one planner that does nothing but essentially that kind of work and working with municipalities. We also conduct gateway meetings. I'm sorry if this is too long. We also conduct gateway meetings with applicants and members of the local board to essentially flesh out projects to make sure that everybody is on the same page and everybody understands what the issues are. We invite the County Health Department, the Department of Public Works, and the Department of Transportation, DEC, and other interested agencies, as well as the member from the County Planning Board that's representative. Local elected officials are invited as well. There is some consideration with respect to making sure that we don't have a quorum present, so we don't have an issue with respect to a public meeting that essentially requires notice, et cetera, et cetera. We conduct probably one or two of those a month. And board membership is taken very, very seriously. I have a lot of professionals on the board. I have a lot of former elected officials that were on the board. Our current board president is actually the supervisor, chair, is actually the supervisor from the town of Rochester, Mike Baden. So that's what you're voting on, essentially, to put a member on the board from the city of Kingston.
Any questions? Okay. Is there a motion?
Motion on resolution.
Second.
Motion by. Yeah. Okay.
For discussion.
No.
That was. Okay. I had a question.
Okay.
Did you say that the meetings are not. The open meetings?
Gateway meetings are not, because they're not meetings. There's no quorum of a board present. So they're not, and that's actually been decided at the court level right now. So we don't have a quorum present. So it's sort of like you and I getting together and a few other people, and as long as it's not a quorum present, it's not a meeting.
Great, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, may I have a motion?
You ready?
Have a motion?
Yeah, but then he asked a question, so I went back.
So it doesn't count? Motion.
Roberts even allows that.
Kevin Roberts.
he apparently wrote the rule.
All right. So we have all in favor.
Aye.
Any opposed?
You guys gotta stop making me laugh.
Resolution has been a hysterical. Okay, Resolution number 14, authorizing the chair to sign easement agreement with Verizon New York, Inc. for purposes of extinguishing an easement on lands of the county located on Golden Hill, City of Kingston, Department of Planning.
So moved.
Second?
I'll second.
Wonderful. Discussion?
So this, first of all, generally, any of the issues involving property require a decision at the legislative level in terms of doing something with it. So that's the first thing you need to know. This project is just a, this resolution relates to a housing project that the county was engaged in with respect to Golden Hill. It's 164 affordable housing units on Golden Hill. The county has, by resolution, surplus the property to something called an Ulster County Development Housing Development Corporation. It is a LDC, Local Development Corporation. We have not transferred the property. The county has not transferred the property to the LDC at this particular point in time. We're actually waiting till all the funding is in place for this affordable housing project. As part of the title search with respect to this work that was done by the developer of this project, we uncovered an easement on the property by Verizon. And that easement will affect some of the issues associated with the construction of the project. Verizon has agreed and has already signed a release on that easement. It's an old easement. It's not needed anymore from Verizon. So what this does is essentially allow the chair to assign that easement so that it would extinguish it on the property.
Questions? No? Is there a motion?
I need the motion. And it wasn't for discussion, it was the motion.
Oh, it was the motion.
Yes, it was.
It was the real motion. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. All right, resolution number 15, authorizing the County of Ulster to submit an application and insurances to the New York State Housing Trust Fund, HTFC, as part of New York State Homes and Community Renewal for the Plus One ADU program in partnership with RUFCO and various municipalities, Department of Planning.
Motion for discussion.
Second.
So, if this is confusing, plus one ADU, ADU means accessory dwelling unit, and plus one basically describes what an accessory dwelling unit is. It is a program that exists from the Department of, the Housing Community Renewal. The county is already in a receipt of a $1.75 million grant for this program. The program provides for the construction of accessory dwelling units with a subsidy of $125,000 per unit, with the sense that in order for you to be eligible, you must be a low and moderate income homeowner in order for that to occur. We have been engaged in the program currently for about 7 or 8 months. We have applications out. We anticipate that we can fund somewhere in the neighborhood between 17 and 25 units, depending upon the overall cost of those units. We have over 80 applications right now in front of us. So that was round one of the ADU program. Round two has now been announced by the state. We've went back to the state and asked them if we would be eligible to apply, even though we haven't expended the monies from round one yet. The state said yes. So we went out and talked to the communities that we have applications from and asked them if they'd like to be a joint applicant with us. They have, most of the communities have agreed. So we're going to put in the application. If it's approved, we put in the application for another $2 million. We'll see what they give us or not give us. I would expect that this is a significantly more competitive application process than round one. It was the first time it was ever done in the state. We were lucky enough to jump in at the first instance. We partner with a nonprofit on this. The nonprofit partner is RUFCO. They take the maximum allowable administrative cost is 10%. They take 10% of that in order to essentially do that, to do the work necessarily to get all of that done. The county did conduct with the City of Kingston. We were joint partners with the City of Kingston to begin with. The county did conduct a design charrette, and we did award design effort with respect to a modernistic design for an ADU from the City of Kingston. And what that does is that we actually pay the architect for those plans, and they could be used free of charge by anyone that essentially wants to use those drawings. We have a second runner-up, which is more of a panelized construction. We're having discussions. We may come back to you for funding. We're having discussions with that architect in terms of what those plans would cost us to use relative to the remainder of the plus one ADU program. I have a planner in my office. His name is Kai Lord Farmer. He basically spearheads all this effort. And this is part of the county's what we call the Housing Smart Communities program that the county has adopted, and we're working through. We have 12 communities that are part and parcel of that program. Looking at this application, we anticipate that what we're going to try to do is make sure from a geographic context that the communities that join with us on this application, that at least two of the ADU units would essentially be reserved for that community. And that would leave us about, given what we're thinking about 7 or 8 units that would be geographically spread. None of those units would be in the city of Kingston because of the first round funding, and we're a partner within the city of Kingston as well.
Questions?
Sorry, how many communities did you say were involved in the Housing Smart Communities program?
I believe there's 12. We're currently working with another 2, so we may have 14, but certainly by the end of February, we anticipate that we would have another 2 involved. But we have 12 that are currently signed up. We're currently working with the town of Woodstock right now. We have a consulting contract with them to do some outreach relative to some of their zoning changes, and one of the biggest difficulties with respect to affordable housing is convincing the public that somehow that it basically separating the myths from the facts. So that's one of the things we're working on. We're currently working on a scope of services for the city of Kingston, and we're also working on a contract for work with the town of Olive as well. I've been completely surprised by the acceptance of local municipalities, which generally sort of have little taste for affordable housing, by the acceptance of this program within the affordable housing sphere. And I think it shows a really good sense of what we crafted this program, that it was bottom up. Was sort of what we call pick your own adventure in terms of things that you can do to streamline affordable housing. And we've had some really excellent response. I ran some numbers today and no one has seen these numbers yet. I had the staff run numbers in terms of not affordable housing, but the total number of housing units that have been proposed in the county since 2019 that have been reviewed by the county planning board and are in various states of either approved and or under or pending or in some instances under construction. That's about 2,700 housing units in the county since 2019. Out of those, because of things that are related to inclusionary zoning and others, about 385 would be affordable. Some senior, some mixed use. But it gives you a sense about the scale of the 164 units that the county is proposing in terms of the number of affordable housing units that are out there.
Question. So the ADUs, are they, to get an ADU grant for homeowners, is it the homeowner's income that you look at, or is it the renting?
No, that's a great question. I really appreciate it. It's mixed. It's okay. Really, what ends up happening is it's actually flipped. The state program as it's proposed and as it's been operating is essentially the income of the homeowner, not the income of the renter. So it's a creation of units. The idea being is it helps the low and moderate income homeowners stay in their house rather than essentially making a low and moderate income unit available. So it's completely changed around.
Is the rent on the unit mandated to be affordable or not?
No, it's not.
Okay.
You know, it's not mandated to be affordable. So the way it was, and the homeowner's income is limited for a 10-year period. It's 10 years under the state. Yeah.
I just interview it.
Are there any income limitations on using the ADU plans, or can anyone use the ADU architectural drawings?
It's scaled to essentially be tied to the program. That would be a question, I think, back to the architect. They didn't release them generally. They just released them. They would release them to the program, not to the architect. So the short answer I would give you without researching it further would be it's probably tied to the program. It would probably cost us more money to release it generally.
That's there, Nolan.
Yeah, I just wanted to echo the comments about the how wonderful it is that the communities are in Ulster County are picking up these programs and opportunities now. And I just want to say that it's not accidental. Mm-hmm. We have had leadership from the current county executive and prior county executives and tremendous work by the Department of Planning to educate communities, to make affordable housing a priority. And I think that the community has picked it up and it's in the air, and so opportunities that come out now are being received in a far different way than they were 10 years ago, 5 years ago even. So kudos to the planning department and I think leadership and the work of the legislature as well, highlighting affordable housing and making it a county goal.
Karen, one of the things that the legislature, if I'm taking too much time, please stop me. One of the things that the legislature did last year was, several things. One is they passed a local law which made housing a county purpose. Believe it or not, before this time, county law did not provide for housing to be funded by the county. The legislature, working with the executive, then went through and created an assigned fund balance of $15 million directed at affordable housing, and that was defined within that within the resolution. And we're currently working on, they then created a housing advisory committee with appointments from the executive and from the chair. And we're currently working on a notice of funding availability, otherwise known as a NOFA. We would anticipate that would be reviewed by the committee with recommendations, and hopefully end of February, early March, we would be out on the street with a notice of funding availability. The legislature, in prior discussions, has agreed that the general amount of funding would be available in any given year would be about $3 million. And there's a whole host of things relative to that. And if any legislator is particularly interested in the criteria for that is being discussed, I think we're meeting on the 6th of February with that committee, and certainly we have draft criteria that is available to the legislature that was part and parcel of the resolutions that were passed.
Thank you. Legislator Collins.
A quick question. Is the ADU plan attached to the one that is for the architectural plan?
Detached,
okay. And then I also want to just comment on something that Legislator Nolan said, is there is still some resistance within some communities to zoning changes that would impact affordable housing. We're in the middle of that in Woodstock now. If you drive into Woodstock the first time, you'll see there's opposition to the zoning changes in Woodstock.
Legislator Stewart.
I was just going to comment how, you know, housing was listed by the county executive in her speech to the Roundup Valley Business Association last week as, you know, one of her, as her biggest, you know, agenda item. In our Democratic caucus, members of the Democrat, my side of the aisle, also listed housing as our number one focus. And I also wanted to say that I know that at least one of the communities that I represent, they are, for the record, you know, really gung-ho on actually building affordable housing in Marbletown, and that's something I sent an email to you about earlier, which I look forward to discussing with you at, you know, at a later date.
And, you know, the amazing thing I think about is the communities have shown a remarkable willingness to essentially not only look within their statute and within their community to identify areas, and Marbletown has been, I think, a leader in that from a rural community standpoint. And I think the other leader that really doesn't get a lot of credit is the Village of New Paltz. The Village of New Paltz has had a what they call inclusionary zoning for a number of years, and they have a substantial amount of housing that has gone through the necessary approval process trying to meet the housing needs in and around that central area, that activity center in the center of the county. City of Kingston also, obviously, with their most recent zoning change, their form-based code, and prior work is done, and the mayor's efforts. So we're heartened by the fact that the discussion seems to be shifting. But Woodstock is a great example that there's more to be done.
Any other questions? Do I have a motion?
Motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, resolution passes. Thank you, Dennis. I appreciate that. The next resolution we have is resolution number 38, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 1 of 2024, a local law amending Article 3 Hotel Motel Room Occupancy Tax of the Code of the County of Ulster in relation to determination of taxable rent to be held on Tuesday, March 19th, 2024 at 7 p.m. Discussion?
Motion to discuss.
Second. Okay. Thoughts? Legislator Hewitt?
Is this for the committee that you're on?
So could... Yeah.
Well, Legislator Litz is also on this committee, right?
Sure.
So Legislator Litz,
it's not from that committee.
Great. Thank you.
Would you like to give an update on the working group?
As of 3 o'clock today, we had our first meeting.
First?
Second meeting. We have a direction. We just made our next meeting is going to be February 6th at noon. Meeting after that is February 13th at noon. At our February 6th meeting, we've invited members of the all-inclusive community to come in. They want to make a presentation, and we'll use that information to move the committee forward on our findings and results.
Great. Legislator Nolan?
In particular reference to this proposed law, I appreciate it that it's in, and if it were exactly the direction that the working group was headed, I would be happy, because I'm sorry that we'll probably not have anything to introduce until for March's mm-hmm. agenda.
Oh, come on. We can do it.
Well, with the deadline to have it in for February is already passed, so we can't undo that. But I think that we have the support of the individuals and organizations that are going to be affected by this law to take the a little deeper look, and the direction we're heading would add a category rather than simply change numbers in the existing chart. Mm-hmm. If you change numbers in the existing chart, then everybody gets that, and what we're seeing is that there are inclusives that have more than one other charge, mm-hmm. as it is put here.
Mm-hmm.
We also are contemplating changing that language, since it says other charge, but in the all-inclusives, the recipient of the service or the activity is not charged. So it's just kind of clunky language for what we're trying to accomplish. So I think that moving in the direction of adding another category, we're also in the meeting with the all-inclusives that will be able to join us. We'll look at their data to make sure that this particular portion of 2080 makes sense. It probably does, because they've been giving us in various committees through the years similar information, and it's been about that. But I think it should be formally submitted to the county, to a working group like this, so that if anybody else in another category has a concern or complaint, another point, that they come and they have the same process, and not just, I would like to have it be 2080, and we bring forward a resolution to that effect. So that we're going through a process that I think will make sense to people that are both regulated or that are hearing about what the changes are, and that it's worth an extra month to do that, recognizing that the change from 2% to 4% with the implementation date that we have is costing thousands of dollars to some mm-hmm. of this industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're paying for the fact that we're trying to get this right. And I am deeply appreciative of that, but still think we should do that. We should get it right rather than do this cut and then have to look at it again and make some other changes.
Right.
I had a question for Legislator Mellon or Legislator Redson. I realize that what I'm about to say would require going back to the state, and but I was just curious if that committee is also investigating perhaps increasing the rate of taxation on short-term rentals. Is that within your purview as well?
It's not what our working group has taken up, and we've created a mission statement. It's not in that.
It's not.
But my understanding is that the STRs were covered by the law that we enacted at the end of 2023.
Yes.
So that it's not necessary that we go back, unless we want to try to separate out STRs, which would be a difficult
thing. Because I know that some legislators are advocating a higher rate of taxation on short-term rentals than the 4% that was voted on.
Our group has not been charged to address that.
Okay, that was just curious. Thank you.
So I feel like what I'm hearing is that we still need to gather some more data before we have like a real kind of streamline of what we want to do. So I would like to propose that we postpone this for a month.
We postpone a month, and that puts our decision off a month. Because this is just a public hearing,
mm-hmm.
I wonder if, before this takes place, that if we can come to a consensus over the next couple of meetings onto the changes we want, if the sponsor of this would be amenable to make those changes
prior to the public hearing,
then we wouldn't have to hold it up another month.
That is a good thought.
And if he doesn't, then
we have to vote.
We go the other way.
What we want.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm sorry, who is the sponsor?
Joe Maloney, okay. It says here.
So question just for information. If the committee votes to put this law out for a public hearing, and then we make what is a substantive change, then can we switch the document that was put out for public hearing? I don't think so. I think we would need to make these changes prior to putting it out for public hearing. Otherwise, we'd have to have another public hearing for the different document.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm wondering, because I believe that might be correct, is could we, you know, we don't have the sponsor here tonight.
That's right.
We can make the changes that we think we're going to come to,
but
he's not here.
But he would have to agree to that. But what I'm saying is there's a possibility, depending on our outcome of our next meeting, that we'd only be making changes to the table.
The part of the change in the law, but yes.
We still have to consent to that.
It's advantageous to hold a public hearing if you're looking for data and input,
mm-hmm.
because you can get data and input out of the public hearing, and even if you have to hold another one, you have to hold another one. So,
it seems to me that it would potentially preserve some options. It just might be confusing if we have two different laws that are quite similar but have important differences out there.
Yeah. I'm actually trying to take and morph this into the law
right,
and save a month.
I think we should head in this direction, because perhaps at Ways and Means, or perhaps at a meeting of the full legislature before the public hearing, we could make these amendments.
Yeah. Public hearing is not till March, so we've got time.
Yep.
Set the public hearing and then try to get the law the way we need it. If it could save that month, it would be worth our twisting ourselves into some kinds of pretzels, I think.
And as you said, it saves these businesses money as well.
Right. Mohawk is at $70,000 through March.
Yes.
Oh, it's $40,000 just this month.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm all for saving money for Mohawk.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on.
What's the law on, what's the rule, or what's the rule on how long the law has to be out to public before public hearing? Is it 10 days, 30 days? What's the...
No, it's just got to be, we have a deadline on resolutions when they have to be in by, which then gives the administrative staff the time to publicize and do everything so that everything's in order before our legislative session. So I think, what's the date, the 23rd?
The clerk has to advertise the public hearing, so okay. If that's 2 weeks, I think.
But
that's 10 days.
It has to show the actual law. They mm-hmm. can't change it between the announcement of the public hearing and the public hearing.
So it's the one that's online.
Okay.
But I think an important point while you're considering the timeline,
mm-hmm.
the sponsor still needs to consent to whether it's the mm-hmm. table or any content in the law. Mm-hmm. If he does not consent to the change, the law or the resolution with the law goes back to the committee in its original form. So you didn't buy any time.
Unless,
so it would be this committee, it would come back to this committee in its original form, which would not include your amendment that mm-hmm. in the event that he didn't consent to it. Do you know?
That's
unless in ways, unless Ways and Means defeats it and then it's done.
No resolution at all, but you exactly. were discussing mm-hmm. the amendment process, trying to get it in.
Mm-hmm. But so what I'm imagining is that if the public hearing date is March 19th, that if Ways and Means meets this month and this committee meets next month, that the amendments could be made in both committees if the sponsor agrees, and then there's still the 10 days notice before the public hearing, so we get the correct law, the amended law, I should say, out to the public. So I think that it's possible with the cooperation of the sponsor that this would save some time. And if the sponsor is uncooperative, I think then the body prefers the law that the working group is working on, then we have to defeat this law sometime between now, or
yeah.
defeat this public hearing sometime between now and March 19th.
Yep.
I mean, you can hold the public hearing and just not defeat the resolution adopting the local law.
Yes.
Right. But then if we make a substantive change, we got to have another public hearing.
Well, in that example, though,
yeah.
Legislator Nolan's mm-hmm. proposing there'd be a new local law.
Right.
Right.
Not an amendment to this local law.
But passing this tonight, as I understand it, would allow us to have a new local law going through its process, which might be available in March, and a amended local law available in, no, I'm sorry, I said March, April, mm-hmm. and a this amended one available. Well, it's still April. It saves 2 months if we do this.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So if the sponsor is agreeable, this would be beneficial.
I think I mean he's put this in, which is in the direction that we are going. I would find it highly unlikely that he would not be.
I'm hopeful that he would be agreeable. And then we get the best of both approaches. The send it in and have something your foot in the door
mm-hmm.
and do the careful work. And if we can have the benefits of both, why not?
Based on that, I will make the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Can I make a brief comment
yes.
on a term in Resolution 11?
Sure.
The last 3 weeks in our county, we've had two college students run over and killed mm-hmm. in New Paltz mm-hmm. and Sawbase.
Yeah.
And we don't term that vehicle violence. And the resolution in 11 talks about this program in Kingston and Ellenville about gun violence. Mm-hmm. I just think it's I know I'm swimming upstream on this, but I do think that it's not the instrument that causes the violence. It's the individual behind
mm-hmm.
the instrument.
Mm-hmm. So we ask Sharon to give us a little bit more of a description of that program.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think that's necessary. I just wanted to just all I had to say. That.
No, I appreciate it.
These are ongoing agreements that we do every year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in order to do that, we would have to have a new agreement with some agency that we don't even have, we haven't identified yet.
So I think that the name of this program is how they get paid through the state for the work that they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so she even said that they don't call it that here.
Yeah, I'm not advocating that. I just, it just seems to me that that terminology, it just seems to be a convenient and often used terminology that I think should be correct.
Yeah, I think that's great for us to be more aware and, you know, kind of dealing with that.
I was at a meeting last night that was addressing vehicle violence mm-hmm. and the epidemic of road violence, and the language is evolving to be called vehicular violence. And it was by the Rural Ulster Transit Alliance. I'm the legislative representative for us, and it was just fascinating to hear people tell very sad stories about loss, people who have been left on the sides of roads with no shoulders for their bicycles, you know, horrible experiences. And I think that there was a lot of discussion about education. How do we educate drivers about how to be more safe? Because in a way, it's the infrastructure. Sometimes it's the driver itself, but sometimes...
Well, there's a requirement under New York law. When you're in an accident where somebody's injured, mm-hmm. you have to stop and render aid. So mm-hmm. just by failing to do that, even if the person lived, he gets a felony offense. So
mm-hmm.
it's it really goes to the heart and intention of the operator of the vehicle in these cases.
Can I also just say that last term, I was one of the folks that was working to pass the Safe Passing Act, and we sent a memorializing resolution up to the state asking them, because in New York State, the amount of space that you give a pedestrian is with due care, which is not quantifiable, and that's what we're asking for, because you can say, you know, if it's less than 3 feet and you hit somebody, then they broke the law and it's quantifiable. But it's right now the way that it's written is with due care. And so it's a problem, and it's been kind of stagnant at the state level because the folks that are on the transit committee don't want to spearhead it and get it through, because a lot of them live in rural communities where they drive. So, yeah, so thank you. Okay, so we have, hold on, I have to get back to my little note here. We have upcoming stuff. Forthcoming resolutions. We have stuff? Oh, yeah, discussion on the IDA. So, office will be sending out a press release in the immediate future notifying the public of the opportunity to serve on this board as well as other boards and commissions. This committee has traditionally interviewed interested candidates and recommended individuals to serve on the IDA Board of Directors. Generally, it's for a two-year term that coincides with our body. So the timeline on that is that over the next month, we should be collecting candidate applications. We should be looking to schedule interviews for the March 5th committee meeting or at a special meeting in the near future. The current board was appointed via Resolution 250 in May 17 of 22, I think it was. The three of us, right? Me and you and her. Were you?
Mm-hmm.
No, you weren't. Were you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Brian and Joe did the last round of IDA interviews. We're going to do it again.
Good.
But not on Zoom. We're going to do it.
Oh, I like that.
They might be on Zoom, but you all will be here.
Yeah. We're going to be here.
Who might be on Zoom?
The candidates.
The candidates.
Why? The lack of commitment.
Well, no, we could add it to the rubric.
Yeah. No, why?
That's what you all have, because you do the interviews in executive session, they can come in and go out quickly. I mean, I can invite them to come in person, should you like, and they'll sit out there and wait for each other and see each other pass.
The
RRA interviews were done with the candidates.
I was just going to say.
On Zoom here in this room.
Yeah, I know, and I didn't like it last time, and I'm not going to like it this time. These people are going to have to come here in person to go to a meeting if they're appointed to the board. If they're serious about applying to the board, they should come here in person.
I agree.
I'll noodle it over.
I agree.
Let me
it shows a level of commitment.
Okay.
Do we have to fill the few vacancies?
Yeah, so we're down two members right now because Diane Enyon and Lynn Archer resigned in January. So I don't know, are we filling those vacancies before we do this round, or we're just going to do this round of interviews and then...
And how do you find the people just into the round?
So that's what I said before, there's going to be a press release sent out like immediately after this meeting in the near future.
I believe this week.
This week, telling folks that the applications will be open and that please consider applying for the IDA board.
You all can.
Yeah, and we should share it too.
By the time you fill the vacancies, we'll be interviewing people for the next board. Let's just do it all at once.
Okay.
And will that announcement come to members of this committee as well?
Yeah, we'll make sure it does.
Yeah. So then we could
push it out.
I would think it would have to come to this committee because we're the ones that do the interviewing and the appointing. Leave us off that.
Okay. Do any members have any new business you would like to discuss? Any old business you would like to discuss? Okay. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Hearing none, I will make a motion for adjournment.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.
Awesome.